Hey everybody, it's Travis.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is The Wheat and the Chaff. Thanks for listening. It's been a long summer, and so we are kicking off the fall as we do with our first fall episode of a new season. Yeah. But let's play some catch-up.
Yeah, it's a busy summer. My youngest son, he was on this baseball team, and we made it all the way to the Cal Ripken World Series.
Woohoo!
And we went to Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and played in the World Series. We didn't win the whole thing, but we won the Iron Man bracket, as they call it, and came home with some nice medals, and they had a super fun time. So it was a fun summer of baseball. It was a lot of baseball, but it was a fun summer of baseball. And yeah, that's now we're in the fall season, and my wife's super busy with her photography, and our school has started, and they're in school 5 days a week, which is a glorious thing.
It's a good thing when they all go to school.
It is good. We had the same kind of fun summer. We sent our oldest off to college, and so we're actually got one less in the house now, and the other one's in school doing the good stuff. So it's been a bit of a summer. Many things have happened. At some point in the next few episodes, we're going to have to talk about what I think is probably one of the really interesting pieces of content to come out over the summer, which is the rise and fall of Mars Hill.
Oh, man, yeah.
So I feel like we should sit down and do a bit of a review, and maybe we'll bring in a couple of people who also really got into it. I know that we've got a couple of friends who have also been following the rise and fall of Mars Hill.
Yep.
You and I have talked a lot about Mars Hill in the past.
Yeah.
I started off as a bit of a Mars Hill fanboy.
Yeah.
I really liked their vibe.
I liked Driscoll too. I have his book on doctrine and
Vintage Faith. I think was that one.
He did Vintage Faith, and then he did a book called Doctrine. It was just on Christian doctrine, and it was I liked it. It was pretty. It was very kind of like systematic theology type of book.
But I like his. I remember really liking his Vintage Faith, and I kind of had that same thing where it was like I was initially attracted to Mars Hill through a lot of their creative stuff, a lot of their music, mm-hmm. a lot of their mm-hmm. stuff, their graphic design. They had a lot of great creative resources. I connected just from a personality standpoint. I really enjoyed Mark's style of just stream of consciousness teaching, I guess would be the best way of describing it. Like, he has a tendency to just go, and I was like, oh, here's someone else who has a handful of notes and can mm-hmm. preach an hour long message off of it. And early Mark Driscoll, I feel, was pretty solid in most of his stuff. It was it was like kind of later on, obviously, that he got more and more kind of buying into his own hype. But anyway, it's a fascinating podcast. I know you've been listening to it. I've been listening to it. So I feel at some point we'll have to sit down and maybe review a couple of our favorite episodes. We've also had a summer of kind of light COVID-related things, but now we're moving into the fall where things get a little bit more convoluted and people trying to figure out the best way to stay healthy and keep... which, of course, leads me to Kenny Copeland. because again, let's refresh some memories for those of you who have been tracking with us for a while.
I'm trying to find the video right now.
For those of us who have been tracking for a while, Kenny has a unique relationship with COVID. Ever since he blew it away with the hot breath of God, I believe that was a year and a half ago now. He blew it away.
Blew it away.
Literally just spat upon everybody within the vicinity with his Copeland-y breath. and he kind of just blew in many different directions. And everybody on stage with him, I believe, also blew. I feel like a Tobias Funke Arrested Development thing here if I just keep using the word blue, but whatever. Kenny's been busy. Kenny did that. He blew away the thing. Vic, the YouTuber Vic, what's his face, made the great video, the remix video of Kenneth Copeland and his crazy eyes blowing away the COVID. And then Kenny kind of just dropped off the face for quite a long time. No one was quite sure where he went.
Yes.
And then he reappeared.
It's almost like he reappeared in a kind of a very twisted, weird way. Like the return of Jesus. They died?
Like a thief in the Jesus, night kind of thing?
Or? Jesus died, and then there was silence.
There was just silence, and then...
And now, and Kenny has come back with a vengeance. And this is the latest Kenny Copeland, and I texted this to you, and I remember we got together after I texted it, because you never responded. I was like, did you not see that video I sent you?
Something? No, and I somehow had completely missed it. I was like, what video are you talking about?
And then, and then you watched it, and you were like, how like, did I miss this?
How could I possibly have missed this?
So, we don't know that. So, it's a video of, it's at a service,
mm-hmm.
one of his services at his church, and it's a communion service.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure... My first quote, let's just play the video and then we'll talk about my questions. So this is Kenny Copeland, and we'll have to post this video, but this is Kenny Copeland preparing the juice, or maybe they use wine. I don't know,
they don't use wine.
Yeah, they use juice.
You know they're using grape juice, which actually makes what's about to happen even worse.
Yeah, it's so bad. So anyway.
At least wine has some sterile kind of effects to it. It's got the alcohol content.
Yeah.
So go for it.
Yeah. I'll give you some commentary. He is grunting because he's cutting his hand to put blood in his cup of juice.
Now his blood is in my body.
Yes, sir.
It's in there. His blood is mixed with my blood. Can you see it?
Is Kenny referring to his own blood as Jesus' blood?
Anything about covenant.
That's the question I have. So,
you know what I love about us is we don't pull punches. We guarantee quality content here, and we come right out of the gate with just something that's spectacular like that. Here's Kenneth Copeland cutting his own hand to drip it into his own goblet of grape juice.
Juice.
To drink his own communion while also declaring that this is somehow divine blood.
Yeah, so here's my question. Is he trying to say that his blood, as you were saying, is the blood of Jesus or comparable? I'm not really sure. And then my other question is, there's another guy there helping him, and why are you supporting this?
Why didn't you? The minute Kenny whipped out the knife, that dude should have been like, Copeland has a sharp object again. You know, and like he needs to just like talk into the wrist, right? Yeah. Like
cut the feed, cut the feed, cut the feed. Yeah.
You know, eagle. The eagle has a beak. The eagle has a beak. Just, whatever's about to happen, you know, you don't want to see, and yet, but this was true for the COVID thing, right? Like Kenneth's up there doing his puffy cheek blowing of the COVID away. And he had a whole crew of like
just
eight or nine dudes
okay.
up there going, yep, this seems appropriate. This is nothing to question.
This
here.
Is not crazy at all.
At what point does this kind of enabling form of ministry?
Like can we call it ministry?
No,
we gotta put
we really
the quotations.
We have to, yeah, there's some quotations happening going on there. One. Ministry. I will say the quotations in my voice. Ministry.
There you go.
I
heard it.
But at what point, like, at what point do you just at least come to your senses? Like, how far at this point do you think Kenneth has to go before those guys on that stage go, oh, that was not a good idea?
If they didn't say anything when he cut his hand and put blood in his cup, they're not going to say anything. He can just do whatever the heck he wants now. I mean, the next thing he's going to do is probably slit a guy's throat.
It's just so... It's so bizarre that, I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, there have definitely been places that I've been where I have gone in completely thinking like, okay, here's what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to be part of. This is what this represents. Yeah. And then in the course of the evening or the session or the conference, you go, oh, this is something completely different.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, I am not comfortable with this at all.
Yes.
Most people, it seems to me, would find some way to be like, I shall remove myself from this situation. I shouldn't be here. I don't want to actually be recognized in this room right now. Please make sure that there's no one looking at me with a cell phone so that Facebook does not, you know, tag me in the algorithm, right? Because I don't want to be seen connected to these people. I think we, you know, most of us have had some form of that in some way, shape, or form. What is it about a guy like Kenneth Copeland? What is it? What does it take to sell your soul? I guess is the real question. To be on that
obviously
stage and just smile there while he does this kind of nonsense. And I say that because, you know, while we take Kenny because he's a little, well, he's a little bonkers now, I guess is really just the best
psycho
way to say it. He's gone off some realms. And I say that both tongue-in-cheek and a little bit of a facetious way, but I also say that very practically, right? Like, the things that he's practicing doctrinally are inerrant. They are errant. Excuse me. They are not inerrant. They are in error. There's what
there
I meant to say.
That's what
you know, the stuff that he's teaching practically and spiritually, the stuff that he's modeling, it's wrong.
Yeah.
It's just very wrong. And you know, that's kind of a almost like a clownish version of it. What we saw in Mars Hill.
Yeah.
Is the same kind of stuff. Some of the stuff that Mark started getting into, the stuff that Mark started teaching, the stuff that Mark started displaying, was wrong. In both cases, you had this team of enablers.
Yeah.
And in both cases, you had this place where the very people who probably should have been the ones to keep you safe and go, don't do that, didn't. Yeah. And I'm just curious, like, what are your thoughts on... Why don't you think, you know, whether you take it from the serious level like a Mars yeah. Hill, whether you take it from the almost, again, you know, circus act that is Kenneth Copeland at this point, what is it in both those situations that causes people not to respond in what I think we would say is normal, like a normal response of like, dude, we're crossing the line. This shouldn't happen. In both cases, they just continue cheerleading. What do you think leads people to that?
Well, I think that... Okay, I'll answer in kind of two ways. So I think from the general people in the audience, you have probably been there for so long that you've almost been kind of brainwashed and thinking this is normal, thinking this is okay. You're used to his, especially like Kenneth Copeland, you're used to his kind of crazy.
Kenny being Kenny
yeah,
kind of
Kenny
thing.
Being Kenny. And he has like put himself on this... in this position to almost be like, as he talks, he is God's voice. And so you don't even need to read your Bible to even check up on the fact that
apparently he is, if Jesus's blood runs through his very own veins, I mean, some
he is Christ incarnate there. Right there. And so I am convinced that people that go to like Kenneth Copeland's churches, Creflo Dollar, some of these kind of crazy people or these crazy preachers, they don't read their Bibles on their own. Like, they don't read and study and pray and seek the Holy Spirit's guidance and see, is this actually true? Test the spirits, you know? They don't test the spirits. And I think with Mars Hill, I think it was just with Mark's, like, kind of just personality, he was so different than most preachers out there. Because most preachers during that time were like... you know, like the James Dobsons and John MacArthur's and the, you know,
suit. Yeah, because Driscoll came in around like late 90s, early 2000s.
I mean,
and then
Piper
kind of
was
really
around.
Became a little bit more prominent kind of late 2000s.
Yeah, so they were like the suit and tie,
yeah.
You know, just basically delivering like, you know, this long kind of almost like a dissertation type
right.
on Sunday mornings. And not that there's anything wrong with those
no,
types.
No, but then came Driscoll with his kind of
so
jeans
radically
and,
different.
And his, you know, button up that was hanging loose.
Yeah.
And I don't know
so
if you remember, you know, Donald Miller wrote about him in Blue Like Jazz yeah. and called him the cussing preacher.
Yes. And he started doing that and they were like, oh. And so it kind of enamored people to his personality. And he was obviously that charismatic type of personality that drew people to him.
Yeah.
And he had this no-nonsense type of attitude with, you know, I'm not going to listen to you, especially with like men. He's like, I'm not listening to you, a bunch of sissy babies whining about stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And he really put the screws to people, which, you know, it needs to be some tough love at times for things like that. But I think that's what enamored people. But he got to the point where he put himself on this pedestal and didn't put accountability around it, didn't humbly put accountability around him. So like I was actually talking about this a couple weeks ago in a message that, you know, I have an elder board and probably like my right hand man is my buddy Greg.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about how Greg is the guy that if I come up with an idea or if I try to do something or if I do this, he will tell me that's not a good idea. And he's just a no nonsense, like because I was like talking about how New England is very much like that. They're not going to necessarily hide their feelings,
right?
You know, as compared to where I grew up in the South,
they won't necessarily show them either.
No,
but
they won't hide. But like where I grew up in the South, they're about just like kind of go along with things.
Yeah.
But in New England, if somebody doesn't like it, they'll tell you, and they'll tell you right to your face, like, I don't like that.
Right.
And I respect that. You know, I've grown to appreciate that, and Greg is like that, and I've grown to appreciate his advice and his counsel to say, like, that's not a good idea. Or if I ever got out of line, he'd say, you need to stop, you know? And I remember one time, like, there was a time, it was just a very frustrating time in our church, and, you know, it's just like getting frustrated with people and things like that. And he just goes, you can't yell at everybody all the time just because they don't agree with you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he was frustrated too. So like, we're kind of both frustrated, but he's just like, you can't just fly off the handle every time somebody doesn't agree with you.
Yeah.
And I remember that, and it just really hit me. And it was like, yeah, he's right.
But that's where you should have turned him and like, I am the celebrity pastor in Chelmsford.
His blood is in my blood, you know?
But no, I think you're hitting onto something there, right? Like there's a point where, you know, with the celebrity thing, you know, again, on both these levels, you have the celebrity factor at play.
Yeah.
And I think you end up with people who are more driven by getting their picture or being seen on the same stage as that celebrity kind of persona than they are by being the very, at times, unpopular voice of reason in the room, right? Because that's the problem that you run into is, like, it reminds me of kind of growing up in kind of Southern charismatic culture, and maybe you've run into this as well. Have you ever been at the kind of, you know, the conferences, whether it be, you know, a faith thing or whatever, but they get to those points where it's like, we're gonna have a time of prayer. Everybody come forward if you want prayer, and we're gonna call out on this, and we're gonna do this, and we're gonna lay hands on you and pray. And it is inevitable in those kind of like mass moments that someone's gonna start praying and someone falls down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And as soon as that happens, it does not matter how many people stood and received prayer beforehand.
Yep.
The minute you get a faller, the domino effect starts.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, and suddenly everybody falls. And there is nothing more like high pressure than being in the line, watching person after person go plop, 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 plop. And then they get to you and you don't fall. Right? And I feel like that's the same kind of thing. Is like, you know, there becomes this expectation from the room that you're going to go along with it.
Yep.
There definitely becomes an expectation from everybody else in that line.
Yep.
Because, you know, especially in those kind of faith healing movements, right? Like the whole thing is that, you had this incredible significant moment with the Spirit of God, of which your physical body is not capable of standing in the presence of.
Yep.
And so if you don't fall, then either, well, frankly, you haven't had a moment.
Yeah.
You're resisting even worse. So, right, like, so there's this expectation from the room because you went forward to receive prayer. So this is your moment to, you know, to interact with God in that way. Everybody else is falling. There, I think, is even an expectation from the person doing the praying, right? Like, boom, my hand touches someone's head and they fall. Boom, my hand touches someone. Why didn't you fall? Don't you know I'm praying for you? Yeah. Don't you know who I am?
I am the anointed of God.
Right. And it's like, I feel like there's this weird expectation that hits these kinds of moments, you know, where it just becomes almost impossible to become that person who says, no.
Yeah.
We're not going to do this.
Yeah,
this
it's like a peer pressure thing. And I think it's similar to, wasn't it Furtick's church where he would have people, when they were doing like baptisms,
they would seed the room.
They would seed the room with like either altar call people or baptism people.
Right.
And when he would give that call, they would have those seed people come forward. So it would,
they would do their mass baptisms. They would have their big baptism for the year. Right. And I think they would do it a few times. Right. But they would have these baptism Sundays.
Yeah.
Cause I remember getting the document on this.
Yeah.
They would have their baptism Sundays. And they were they actually released a document years ago. It was when I was living in North Carolina. I got a document in from Elevation saying, how do we make our baptism Sundays happen? And, you know, basically the idea was, you know, when you watch our baptism services, you'll notice that there are way more people getting baptized than we announced.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's because we offer baptism for any who want to come and receive it.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And they're like, so how does that happen? They're like, it's a beautiful thing. It's a powerful story thing. It's a great spiritual thing, right? Like, in their mind, this is a really great win for discipleship in their church. But they were also very clear. They're like, you know, these don't happen on purpose or without intention. Mm-hmm. Like they don't happen on accident. My words are getting away from me today. But they were like, they don't happen on accident. Everything is done on purpose. We put a couple of people, like for every basic like group of 50 to 100, there's like 3 to 5 people who might get up out of that group to quote unquote spontaneously get baptized. They're like, because once you do that, you break the ice for people who might really truly want to do it, mm-hmm. but are scared about suddenly being the only person from, you know, section yeah. A or section B or section yeah. C, right? So it's like, there's a part of me that says, from a crowd dynamic point of view, it's smart, right? Mm-hmm. It's a smart play. There's another part of me that says, do we really need, you know, kind of like fake baptisms going on in our churches in order to encourage truer baptisms to happen?
Yeah, it's a,
right? Like
a little deceitful.
Right, like there's a part of me that goes like, why not just go with the people who went through your confirmation classes or went through your baptism courses or at least went through, you know, that like this that process of saying, hey, here's what I want to be and here's how I want to identify in Christ.
Or just
like, why not just leave it there?
Just like, do the baptisms like at their small group. If you have yeah. small groups and you just like, hey, let's have the small group leader baptize these people, and we'll video it, and we'll show it on Sunday mornings, like, as still as a celebration, so you're not...
Yeah.
People, because there are people who are, you know, they're more introverts, and they don't necessarily want to go up in front of, like, thousands of people.
Yeah.
You know, because they're, that's just very hard for them because of their personality. And if you did it in a smaller group setting, you'd probably be more willing, and this and that. But yeah, I think it's just you're trying too hard, and I think with you know, going back to like, you know, the Driscoll and the Copeland stuff, and I think this is where we're seeing a lot of problems with these abuse stories that are coming out of from mm-hmm. churches, where you have these pastors who get to these pedestals that they've probably, you know, put themselves on, or maybe their congregation has kind of put themselves on, and they've run with it, and there's no accountability around them. They don't have an elder board. They don't mm-hmm. have like a council. They don't have anybody around them that will say no.
Or if they do, it's just a group of people who are going to constantly nod and be like, that's yeah. the best
they
idea
have,
ever.
And I think like what Driscoll had was like a bunch of yes men around
him. Right, yeah. Because I mean, Driscoll technically was not even the lead pastor of Mars Hill. He was the yeah. teaching pastor. So he yeah. was, he made a big deal about how he operated under the oversight and under the direction of the lead pastor, who was... yeah, exactly. No one knows that guy's name. Oh, you know who else they don't know? The executive pastor's name or any of the elders' names, because the only name at the end of the day you had to know was Driscoll. Mark Driscoll.
And see, that's the problem. And like, I think one thing you have to look for, you know, if you're at a church, for the, you know, the two people that listen to our podcast, but I think one thing, red flags you have to look out for is in churches is, if you go to like their Instagram or their Facebook and all you see is pictures of the pastor and quotes of the pastor, that's a big issue, I think. I think it's a big red flag.
I'm over here kind of smiling with wide eyes, only because we know so many people where yeah. that is the entire story of like their brand, their yeah. personal brand, as like their personal pastoral brand.
Yeah.
Is like their defining characteristic. So here's what I think we should do. I think this is a fascinating topic. I say we have a next several, like maybe this, you know, our season usually tends to run around 8 to 10 sure. episodes.
Yeah,
like I think like, you know, the next several episodes should be like, hey, let's talk enabling cultures, expectation cultures. What are the ways that we see them? Where do we see them at? We obviously see them in groups like Kenneth Copeland, and trust me, we'll have some fun with that because yeah. there's plenty oh, yeah. of them out there.
There's plenty of Kenny clips.
But they will also be at play in your local church.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter the size, and it doesn't matter the style. It really doesn't matter. Like, those kind of cultures are always... I would say it's one of the biggest tensions in the local church, is to not become, you know, kind of an enabling culture, to find that balance between being, you know, having a person or a team of people who are responsible for vision and for mission, following closely to God's Spirit as the Spirit leads, and at the same time, not just simply kind of becoming a yes man church of whatever, you know, anything that happens here is good. So I to me, it's one of the fascinating discussions. I'd love to spend some time over the next few weeks getting into it, because I feel like we can have some fun pulling from a bunch of different varieties of people.
Yeah,
there's some good. I'm sure we can go find some of our fun Baptists on Twitter to.
I'm sure. I haven't heard much from them lately.
No, it's been a quiet summer for a lot of us.
Look up the pants guy.
So, you know, welcome to the fall. We got to shake it back up a little bit, knock some of the rust off, and delve into the deep dark layers of Christian culture.
Oh, it's so glorious.
All right, well, we'll catch you guys next week. Talk to you later.
See ya.